You know, as I've mentioned several times, there's so many great surprises that are coming up during this podcast, and it's all being led by the Holy Spirit. We never really know what's going to happen, when or how. It's like somebody throws something at Mary Beth and she's like, I got this. I'll make it happen. Well, earlier in the podcast, Gabe has talked about this very dear friend of his, a very special soul, Todd Huber, and he has started his own nonprofit called Catalyst, where he helps to feed the poor. And he's, you know, we've heard about him when Gabe was talking about him. Do you know that, Todd? You're being talked about here recently, and he's joining us today. And we just want to hear a little bit about you, Todd, and how it came to be that you, from what I understand, actually got to meet Mother Teresa, Saint Teresa, Saint Mother Teresa.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Happy to be on. And in my background with Mother Teresa was back in 1995, I was in flight school with the Navy, and was just reading different books, researching how different people applied what they believed to how they lived, and read a book, a wonderful book, it's still in print, called A Simple Path. That's about Mother Teresa and how her spirituality affects kind of the way that she lived every day. I was so blown away by it. I wrote a letter. The letter was just to the missionaries of charity in general. And it was, the letter essentially said, I think what you do is amazing. And the only address I could find was Calcutta. I sent that in, I think, November or so of 95. And then February of 96, I'd forgotten about it by then. I opened a mailbox and there's a letter from Mother Teresa.
Wow.
It essentially said, if you like it so much, then do something about it.
Oh,
she said it tactfully, but you know, you're welcome to come share in our work to the poor. And there's a key quote, and there was a come with a heart to love, hands to serve. And that's been resonant throughout the rest of my life.
And that resulted in a trip to Calcutta.
I did. So, so I went that's April. I went to Calcutta and spent a week there. Went to mass with her every morning and adoration every night. It was just very powerful experience, especially, you know, as a much younger man then. So at that time of life, I think it was really, really powerful and providence. And I've been grateful ever since. I don't know that the day has gone by in my life that at some point during the day, it's not popped up in my mind. It's definitely affected the way I've approached. I had a career as an officer in the Navy, certainly affected my approach to leadership. And it's now affected my post-Navy life dramatically. And it's dedicated really to trying to solve these extreme poverty situations, extreme poverty at a systemic level for communities. But we do that mostly in India right now. So the grace that comes from that is the opportunity to go back to Calcutta. Every time I go to India, we go back there and work with the missionaries of charity. So I'm a self-avowed groupie of the missionaries of charity. They're amazing.
You know, that's something that we oftentimes don't think about as we meet and encounter different people in our lives. Someday you could say, I actually talked to and knew this person who's canonized as a saint. That's an incredible blessing. We have another individual who's with us today, who this is kind of a he said, she said kind of thing. Well, we have Trish Hamlin with us today. And I understand, Trish, you have a friend who was living a little bit on the wild side, and she herself made a trip to Calcutta as well. Can you tell us what happened with her?
I do know that she was drawn to the spiritual life probably around the same time as Todd. I want to say it was around 95, somewhere around 1995, that she just felt drawn to go visit the missionaries of charity. And she did. And she flew out there and she stayed 6 months.
Wow. 6 months. And from what I understand, she was probably least likely to go hang out with the Sisters of Charity.
She was somewhat of an alternative type of girl in high school. She shaved her head. She had long, curly blonde hair, very artistic. Mm-hmm. We were in theater together. So for me to even consider her to eventually become a nun was out of the question.
In reality, what happened? She became a nun.
She eventually became a Carmelite cloistered nun. That's right. And she went and stayed with the missionaries of charity for 6 months. And she said, there's no way, if you're not called to be out there, that you could have stood or remained out there for more than a week. It was just so noisy. so cluttered, you could say, noise-wise, to think and to be with God. It was very difficult for her. And so she just was amazed with Mother Teresa and how she could do that for her lifetime.
Right. Mm-hmm. An inspiration, truly exactly. An inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, Todd, I'm going to assume that you still travel back and forth to Calcutta. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So we, most of the work we do with Catalyst is in Hyderabad and then these islands on the border with Bangladesh. So particularly when we're up in the Sundarbans, those islands, then it affords the opportunity to go back to Calcutta. And for me, every time I go to India, I want to go back and spend time with them.
That kind of answers the next question I was going with. Do you feel, even though Mother Teresa is no longer there, she's at least not physically, I'm sure she's still there fully, fully in spirit. For anybody who's thinking, man, I missed my opportunity for this great spiritual movement. Do you still find people who go are still moved by Mother Teresa, even though she's only with us in spirit?
Yeah, and I'll say, I have a lot of takeaways from that trip, but the immediate takeaway when I first came back was about, I'd use the term, the banality of holiness. It's the ordinariness of holiness, and that Mother Teresa was extraordinarily normal. Right? She was like, I think God really chose her for that reason. Her life is a love story to Christ, but there's nothing about her. She's not 6 feet tall. She doesn't have these special genetics. And so that same, the way she lived her life is lived out with all the missionaries of charity. So you can have that kind of encounter with their approach to service of Christ, their own love story to Christ. You can respond to that and encounter with that wherever you can find a missionaries of charity home. So they're scattered around the United States. They're in 160 countries, I think, right now. So they're all over the world. For those of us here in Florida, there's a house down in Miami. And we've gone with some of the guys in the men's group have gone down there a couple of times. I took my daughter down there. The love of a father is a chatterbox. she's constantly talking. She's not inhibited in any way. She's going to be a strong, powerful woman when she grows up. But she, when the first time the sister walked out, she just went silent. It's the first time I've ever seen her just freeze. And as we walked away from this time she had with the sister there, she says to me, "That was epic." So it was, this seeing that habit. We see those three blue stripes on a sister, a mission of charity sister. It's a pretty cool experience. So yeah, for those who go to Calcutta, I would encourage people to do that. Encounter poverty at that level. I would encourage people again to go look closer to home.
Right. So if it's not in the budget, either time or finances to get to Calcutta, you don't have to. God's brought it to us right here in our homeland. Well, we're going to go on reading now within our book. We are working in the book, The Four Teresas by Gina Lair, and we're on page 103. We're going to look at 10 ways to be more like Mother Teresa. And Gabe, can you begin by reading for us today?
Absolutely. Yeah. So 10 ways to be more like Mother Teresa. Number one, spend time praying in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Number two, volunteer with an organization that serves the poor or sick. Number three, pray an annual novena to Saint Therese of Lisieux. Number four, smile deliberately every day. Number five, visit an elderly widow or widower in your community. Number six, tell one new person a week why you love Jesus. Number seven, give up a treasured food or drink each year and donate the savings. Number eight, participate in a charitable activity that forces you to step out of your comfort zone. Number nine, write to political leaders to ask them to support pro-life, pro-family legislation. And number 10, examine your conscience nightly to see if you look for Christ in your neighbor.
Okay, Mary Beth, what's next?
A discussion.
On any of those, just random?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think Trish would be good because her mother's a widower. I mean, we've had several parishioners die. We've got a lot that we can dive in here too, right? Okay. Gabe, you work for a charity. You work with charity. You know, there's a lot.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
We're good.
Yeah, just to keep seeing them.
So, wow. As we read these 10 items, it's amazing how many touch home. And so so many of them are so doable. I mean, we could easily write to somebody. We could easily, you know, to our politicians. It's really relatively easy to tell somebody about Jesus, but at the same time, that can be a difficult one. That might be one that many people need to consider is making that step. If you feel a little bit nervous about that, maybe God's calling you to do that, you know, step out of your comfort zone. So many people joining us on this podcast have stepped out of their comfort zone to make this happen. And God asks us to do that all the time. But Trish, you in particular, is there anything in there that jumps out at you? I'm going to put you on the spot about speaking about being uncomfortable, right? Anything there that moves your heart or that is speaking to you at this time?
I just feel like I think the one where it says, get out of your comfort zone. I think the Lord brings us to opportunities that you would be surprised to find. And I think you have to be open to it. And especially spending time before the Blessed Sacrament. That's been a huge thing for me. My dad died on the Feast of the Archangels on September 29th. And in the midst of all that, I met Mary Beth. She's a friend of my mom's. They live in the same neighborhood. And she was so gracious to open her home to all of us. I come from a big family, so I have four other siblings. And all the grandkids were coming for the funeral. And it was just a big blessing in the midst of all that. I realized, oh, you know, that's why God brought me to end homeschooling and then begin private schooling with my kids, because I was a school teacher and then homeschooled for 9 years with my kids. And then I felt like God was saying, you know, you have an opportunity every day now that your kids are in private school to do something. And it was, oh, go to Mass, attend daily Mass. And then spending time before the Blessed Sacrament has been a tremendous help.
Beautiful. And I love how we keep seeing this theme popping up again about, you know, how God opens doors and shuts doors. And again, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone, which is what we're all asked to do each and every day. Gabe or Todd, do either of you have something you want to chime in with?
Yeah. You know, my reaction to the list, also, there's a lot of points that resonate, but you know, the thing I'd offer up that's the most powerful is this. You know, the number one is spending time praying in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And I'd say whether it was in front of the Blessed Sacrament or otherwise, if you want to be more like Mother Teresa, spend time praying. I mean, so much of the focus of her life is on her works, but her life is dominated by prayer. Prayer while she's doing the works, but prayer. If you look at the rule of life and the missionaries of charity, I mean, they're up very early, up around 4:45, you know, Mass is at 6 a.m. It's followed by another hour of prayer. So, you know, 8 o'clock when they roll in to the different homes, yeah, they've been up for already in prayer for, you know, 3+ hours. They then take a break from that work for prayer midday, and then, you know, early evening, you go back and it's a few hours of prayer again at night. And they're doing that every single day. So it's really hard to be in love with Christ if you don't spend time with him. I think that's true for anybody. It's really hard to be in love with somebody if you're not spending time with him. And he loves that we do works for him, but he'd rather we just spend time with him. I think so.
You know, anybody who's listening, who's in the United States or any other country where we've got lots of freedoms and comforts, I think the number 7 here where it says give up the treasured food or drink each year, give up something different, we need to learn to sacrifice. We need to learn to step away and to not embrace the comforts of our life each and every day. And it's probably better we do that on our own before God makes it happen on his time. And in his way, it's a whole lot easier if we choose to do it the right way to begin with. So very valuable there and very powerful. We actually two with one stone.
Yeah. And if I can put Gabe on the spot then too, you know, that resonates particularly in our parish as we're coming up into January with Exodus 90 coming up for the men. So this was my third time doing it. I'm planning to do it every year until God tells me otherwise. Gabe did it for the first time this year. Do you want to talk about that at all in that context?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, Exodus 90 was the single most important thing I've ever done. I'm a typical millennial. I'm 34 years old. I've lived a fast life around the world, you know, jet setting here, there and everywhere, and, you know, experienced all sorts of worldly comforts. And yet I found myself pretty miserable and, living in New York and then in Los Angeles. And there was this sort of CAPEX day, this hole in my heart. I was raised Catholic, but lapsed. And I think that's for a lot of people, you know, that are sort of missing something. And you really don't realize that you're not actually missing something. You have to actually get rid of something. You have to sacrifice. You have to learn sacrifice. And I think we live in the modern age of so much grace and so much consolation in the material world. And this is obviously just the story of our history with God, that we forget where we've come from. And so Exodus 90 really reminds you where you come from and gives you, I think the main thing it gave me was silence. And not silence in that just the literal sense, but in the spiritual sense. It gave me the space, and it gives men the space to hear God again, like Elijah, you know, just and to turn things off for 3 months. And it's basically Lent on steroids starting in January. But it's really so well designed for you to succeed in this and for you to re-commune with God. And that's what it did for me. So it's kind of it's like a jump start. It's like a electroshock treatment to your spiritual life as a man of, you know, any age group. We had guys from their early 20s all the way up to
70s. You know,
their 70s, yeah, in our men's group, but we were all going through the same journey. And it's just so beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's that recognition of these attachments. I think how you know, guys starting Exodus saying, hey, I don't have time to do this 1 hour prayer. I don't know how I'm going to fit that in when we go to do Exodus. And they grab their phone and go look at average screen time. Well, if you got 6 hours for your phone, it's just so clearly, unambiguously, in a very guy sort of way, we hold each other accountable really aggressively. Like, well, you got plenty of time for Twitter, right? So that's your priority, right? And then so becoming self-aware and confronting where those attachments are and how much, again, it's really hard to love somebody if you have no place in your heart for them because you've filled it with other stuff.
Very good point. That's a very good point. And how many of us with our spouses, would our relationship be different if they just weren't there? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's better when they are there and when you engage. That's a very good point. Now, tell us again, what is the name of the program? And it starts in January 1st, correct?
So it's Exodus 90. It'll start January 9th. So it's 90 days before Easter. It concludes at Easter. Here at St. Rafe's, we'll do a planning kind of the week before. We'll have a couple of planning sessions, probably at a brewery, because
nice
part of the aesthetics associated with it. So it's prayer, aestheticism, and fraternity. Those three pillars. And it's a very powerful program. It's now done, I forget, millions of men are doing it all over the world. It's only been going, I think, roughly around 5 years or so. Started in a seminary with a bunch of guys. Go ahead.
So for someone who doesn't have it at their parish yet, is there a way they can engage either digitally or started in their own parish?
Yes. And in fact, the first time I did it terribly in that I did it alone. I'd heard about it and I just did it. And then, but I did have one person that I, my best friend from the Naval Academy, who's a Marine, and he and I paired up as anchors. We did it on our own. So finding a group of guys doing it, it's online. If you do Google Exodus 90, there's a ton of humorous videos and a ton of content. There's an app that provides kind of an easy platform to go through the experience. It's got a checklist on the app for the aesthetics each day. It's got reading and reflection that are very powerful. And you really are following Exodus and then the gospel readings associated with Mass each day. So that's it.
That's a huge part of it, is like it's got Lectio Divina basically built into the daily sort of thing. Yeah. So that you're just, every day you have to read a the daily gospel, and the reflections that they provide are so well done. So even if you're on the fence in your faith, you can't really help but be engaged, because it's so well related to just everyday life as a man, but through the word of God. So they're very clever. They're very clever. I'm back in full steam ahead after Exodus 90. So it's all of the grace of God at the end of the day. But Todd's leadership was also very important. So it does help a lot, I think, who's leading the men's group. So if you have a really engaged guy in your parish, if you are that engaged guy in your parish, don't be shy, I think, about grabbing the bull by the horns, gathering some men who you might think are on the fence, and sort of that's what Todd did over a Zoom call. And I was sold, and I think there are a few more guys who are very sold by Todd's own story. And then we all sort of just followed him blindly for a while.
Well, it aligns really well with the conversation I have on being more like Mother Teresa, where I think a lot of men, right, want to serve in that way, feel called to serve, but maybe feel a little bit disconnected because they're not a woman, they're not a nun, they're not like, how do I be like Mother Teresa? And again, I think first step is prayer, and second step is to confront the ascetics. And she lived a very austere life, and she gave up even as a where she'd been a nun. She essentially was the headmaster or the principal at a school, and there were within that school there were even comforts, and she then gave all that up. But she was really nervous about doing that. So men or women are looking at an ascetics, incorporating ascetics into your life, like this, you know, this list kind of calls us to do. I'll tell you, one, it's very powerful. There's thousands of years of saints that have kind of figured that out for us. So I know we're all different and we're all super special, but maybe there's some truth, and you have that many saints saying this is a really powerful thing. It's worth giving it a shot. And then, you know, the other one is if you think you're going to fail, you're right. Like you're going to fail, right? And then there's this beautiful thing called divine mercy that's sitting, you know, Christ is going to be there for you. In fact, at some level, and Teresa of Lisieux said this too, right? There's some level, it's not that he likes our failure, but he does appreciate the opportunity for us in that failure to turn back to him. And every time it's another opportunity for a party, right? It's the sun coming home every time. So there is joy in us falling, because it's another opportunity for us to get back up with him. So I think, again, encourage people to embrace ascetics and to go after it. Not use that, you know, the enemy loves to use that as an excuse. Like, oh, you'll never do this.
All right, real quick, one more time. How do people connect with Exodus?
Yeah, just Google Exodus 90. It's the numbers 90. So just type Exodus 90. There is it is specifically tailored for men. They've had some women orders that discerned for months at a time and came back and also said they don't recommend it for women. It's not really structured well for women. There is one I've seen out there called Magnify 90 that's a similar program, but that's more tailored for women.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Anything else, Mary Beth, that you think we need to cover during this segment?
No.
You think that was good? Adequate? Sufficient? Enough?
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly
it was great. Enough. It was great. The question, was it enough? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's plenty.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm trying to keep them short.
Yeah. Well, that's not, this
like,
one
like
is
15, 20 minutes. It won't be the one we edit out stuff. When I get edits out, like I'll edit out. you'd be surprised how many minutes of that get stuck into each podcast. They shorten up real fast.
No, I think that's good.
People ponder their answer.
Let me stop this for a second.